British Public Radio. Gardening.
Garden Time with radiogardening.co.uk. And Ken Crowther is on location.
Where the Olympics gave us vast areas of meadows of wildflowers. Well, who better to come and talk about wildflowers and how we're going to achieve it perhaps ourselves than Andrew Tokley at Thompson Morgan Seeds.
Okay.
Now, we saw huge areas of wildflowers. So people are now going to want them in their own garden, aren't they?
It certainly has whetted people's appetites and sort of they've said, well, I'll have a go at this, I think. You know, we've certainly seen an increase in people wanting to buy wildflowers.
Not that easy to grow, though, are they?
Well, they're easy to grow, but a lot of people have this misconception that if you've got a bit of grass, you can just chuck a few wildflower seeds in it, and it doesn't work that way, no.
It doesn't work. You've actually got to have bare ground, haven't you?
You have. You need bare ground. Probably if it's not very fertile ground would be even better, so the poorer the ground, the better. And the easiest way of doing it is you actually mix your wildflower seed with either some grass seed, or you mix it with dry sand, and you need about a gram of wildflower seed to 4 grams of grass seed, and you mix it together, and then you can sow it evenly over that area.
Now, would you have different mixes, or can you choose colours or mixes? I mean, how does it really work when you're buying seed?
Well, you can buy mixes like annual mixes. You can have a cornfield mix if you wanted, or you can have mixes that have bring beneficial insects in. Or you can buy the individual colours, individual varieties to put into those. And you can have annual mixes and you can have perennial mixes, obviously, if you're going to... Or you can mix the two. Because if you have just a purely perennial wildflower mix, you're not going to see anything for at least 24 months.
And people don't like that, do they?
So a lot of people mix a few annuals in with the perennials, so that then you've got something instant, so you'll get your corn marigolds and your corn poppies and that sort of thing come through, and then later on you'll get your cowslips and that sort of thing coming through after that.
How much is a packet of seeds? I mean, are we spending a lot of money? Because wildflowers, you've got to grow them in the first place to achieve getting the seed.
You have. A gram of seed is around about a couple of quid.
So it's not expensive.
Not expensive, but as I say, a gram only covers about a metre square. So but what we're seeing, because there's been an increase going forward, we're going to be introducing some bigger packets, and what we're going to do is try and make it easier for the customer as well. Because at the moment we sell them a gram of pure wildflower seed. So what we're going to do, we're going to do 25 gram packs, and we're going to do that as an 80-20 mix. So it's 80% grass seed, 20% wildflower, and that's what you would be mixing it at the same rate, and that way that will cover 5 square metres and they can sow it straight out of the packet, no messing about.
Now Jeff Hodge with jobs in the garden for January.
Many diseases overwinter on plant debris, so always clear away plants and any plant debris and old leaves. These can also be overwintering places for insects and other pests, especially slugs and snails. Making your own garden compost is a great way of producing your own humus-rich material for use as a soil improver and mulching material. Any plant material can be used as long as it isn't diseased. You'll need a compost bin or make a compost heap to keep all the material together and provide the correct conditions for speedy rotting. Make sure there's a good mix of plant material and that any stems or large leaves have been cut into smaller pieces, otherwise they'll take ages to rot down. You can speed up the rotting process by adding a compost accelerator. If the compost in compost bins is ready, then the bins can be emptied and the compost spread over the soil or dug in. If it's not ready, the contents can be mixed up again and the bins refilled. Pots and other containers that are at risk of cracking in the frost should be covered with bubble wrap, Hessian or fleece to insulate them over the winter. Raise patio containers onto feet or bricks to avoid them sitting in the winter wet, which can cause problems with root rotting. In mild weather, weeds will still appear. The best method of control at this time of year is to hoe regularly to keep them in check. Or apply a thick mulch, that's 5 to 7.5 centimetres, 2 to 3 inches deep, of bark chips or composted bark to prevent annual weed growth in the first place. Perennial weeds with long tap roots, such as dandelions, are best dug up by using a hand fork or trowel because it's too cold for weed killers to work efficiently. Now is an excellent time to treat fences and other wooden structures with a preservative. deciduous climbers will have lost their foliage and can easily be moved out of the way. But make sure you cover nearby plants with polythene or similar material to prevent damage from splashing them with the preservative. Make good use of quiet moments to clean out all your old pots and seed trays so that they're ready for seed sowing in spring. Thorough cleaning will reduce pest and disease problems troubling young plants and seedlings. Use household bleach, but make sure you rinse well afterwards. When gardening on wet clay soil, work from a plank of wood or a board rather than treading on the bed itself. This will help spread your weight and help avoid compacting the soil. If you haven't done it already, empty hose pipes and other watering equipment of water and store them away in the shed or garage. Check them for cracks and leaks, possibly caused by water freezing in them, and replace them now before it's time to start using them in earnest.
Tom Cole and myself are looking at emails today. Now, Tom, what's your first one there?
Well, I've got one here from Pat, who's from Wigan, and she's looking at cannas. In fact, she's looking to see what she needs to do with her cannas over a winter period when they're still in flower.
Annuals, they are not an annual, but annuals also have carried on flowering right through the autumn, haven't they?
Well, they have, yes. I mean, I was trying to think of an example then.
I've got geraniums.
But things like even Love in the Mist, which is flowered a little bit later, that's quite...
No,
it's given some good colour.
Cosmos as well went well into the winter as well. But anyway, back to your cannas. So what's the problem with this canna?
Well, I don't think it's a problem. It's just, what do I do with them? And am I doing the right sort of thing? And she's got them in pots, and she's wanting to bring them in, but worried about there's lots of leaf growth, and does she need to cut them down? Could she leave them alone?
You grow cannas, don't you?
Well, I do, actually. I mean, what I do with them is I bring them in, so it's just in a frost-free environment. So if they're in the ground, I'll pot them up, or if I'm feeling a bit lazy, I just dig them up and put them into a crate that's just lined with polythene, and I let the whole lot die down. And if it hasn't died down by February, March, what I'll do is I'll just cut down the growth, repot them, grow them on, and put them out in the middle of May.
You do have to watch with a canna, though, because they've got like a pointed crown in there, haven't they? So if you cut them too low, you can cut that sort of crown out, can't you?
Yeah, you've got to look quite carefully. I mean, one thing I would do is take off any dead or dying leaves as you're bringing them inside, because they might spread fungal disease or cause rotting. And yes, be careful how far you cut down, because there's sort of a knobbly end to the new growth which you don't want to cut into.
Sometimes they produce lots of offsets. Do you pot yours on, or do you leave it just as a clump?
I leave them as a clump, but also you can pot them up, you twist them off, and you can put them into something like a Johninus number 2. So miss out that first stage. It needs to be a bit sort of a hungrier compost, much more rich, and pot that up into something like a terracotta pot or a plastic pot, put them into, again, a frost-free environment, grow them on, and then start feeding around March, April with a liquid feed, something high in potash, so tomato feed would be good, and then put them out into the garden or pot them up into a large container with other plants mid to late May.
Now, Jill in Broadstairs, she's been growing broad beans in containers. Well, actually, she says in 3-inch pots. She's got them just sort of in the garden. She doesn't really know what to do with them. Does she bring them indoors? Does she protect them? She's really a bit of a loss. She's grown them to keep them because she has mice problem, actually, in the garden, in the veg plot. She wants to know what to do with them. Actually, it's a great way of growing them, isn't it?
It is, actually. It's a good way of growing them. And even using things like sort of kitchen towel rolls, cutting toilet rolls. even you can make up containers using card and paper. They'll all degrade. But they're hardy. And, you know, varieties like Aquadolce are very good for sort of sowing and planting in the autumn. And if you do that type of sowing and planting, you might well miss most of the black bean aphid next year.
Good way.
Absolutely hardy.
So they're tough. So if you had them in, say, 3-inch pots, it's worth possibly just putting them against the wall of a garage or a house.
Or in a cold frame.
Yeah, if you've got one.
Or under a cloche. What I would do, and I've just done these actually in a raised bed, is put horticultural fleece over the top of them, so there's
give them
a little bit of protection
with the frosts,
and they'll thicken up their roots and produce nice new growth in the new year.
Yeah, there's one for you, Jim, down in London. Sear rock dust. What the dickens is sear rock dust? I have to show my ignorance. I have got no idea what it is. Tom, have you got an idea?
It's from volcanic rock.
Oh, and didn't they use that at one time to keep slugs away, though, volcanic rock?
Yes, they did, yes. Some control. Basically, it's material that's most of it will be non-synthetic material. It's all rock derived.
So it's natural.
It's natural. It's more of a complete or a compound fertilizer. It's got lots of trace elements in. Excellent for fruit and veg and all your ornamentals. From March onwards.
Yeah, I was going to say, you wouldn't use it now, particularly, would you?
No.
Yeah, in winter, you've really got to wait till growth starts in the spring. The other interesting thing is, that I'm just thinking about that, is the more we see people with exploration to the moon, do you think we'll end up selling moon dust down here?
You never know.
Because it might have elements in it.
Whatever's in it, yeah.
It could have useful elements in it. Thought for the future, you see. We're on the internet, and perhaps we'll be talking in years to come about actually moon dust. Not sear rock dust, but anyway. John, where's John from? Howarth. Oh, that's Yorkshire, isn't it? So what's he asking about?
He's talking about sort of taking cuttings from raspberries.
I've never done that. I've always taken off the offsets, you know, where they grow and you get a sort of spike and you can pull the root away, can't
you? That's the best way of dealing with it. So you're almost sort of splitting and dividing the plant.
Yeah.
Take the suckers away. You've got a stem and a root system.
And you're there, aren't you, really?
Yeah.
You can start again.
And then you can either pot those up or you can actually use them to plug gaps in your current sort of row of raspberries.
Have you taken raspberry cuttings? And why would you, particularly? Well, I mean, we've just said the best method is take the roots away. Why would you take cuttings?
Well, you can take... it's only if you've got the facilities, really. So if you've got area somewhere you can put a cutting... So it's humid and moist and warm. You could take softwood and semi-ripe cuttings. So that's from current season's growth. You could actually take hardwood cuttings.
Oh, that's like you do blackcurrants,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, exactly the same. You could do that from pencil thickness growth produced in that year. And you could take those cuttings any time really between sort of November and February.
So you can still do that,
you can. Yeah. Long cuttings, at least a foot in length, and cut sloping at the top bud, and then work your way down a foot, and then cut a flat cut below the junction, and give the cut surface hormone powder, push that into the ground around the plant, possibly that you've taken it from, to about 2/3 depth, and then just monitor it through the growing season. It'll take about 5 or 6 months to produce roots.
Now, I've got Rob from Swalecliffe, wherever that is. I don't honestly know.
And that's Oxfordshire.
Is it Oxfordshire? Yeah. Okay. Now, he's talking about... I know you hate common names, don't you? He's talking about a flame lily. Now, what is flame lily? Because if you tell me what it is, then I might be able to answer the question.
Well, I'll throw a common name back then. Gloriosa lily.
Oh, Gloriosa Rothschildiana.
That's the one, yeah. It's got a lovely vine, architectural flower, reds and pinks and whites in it.
The red one has nearly a golden edge to it sometimes, doesn't it? Oh,
used as a cut flower as well. Very good climber.
Not hardy?
No, not hardy. It's a tuber. It will overwinter. The whole plant will die down. It's got to be grown inside. And you can buy it from good florists, good garden centres. Excellent plants to sort of add a bit of colour during the growing season.
Used a lot. You see them actually used as sometimes, you said cut flower, but you see them, ladies wear them, don't they? Like a sort of...
Corsage, or a buttonhole.
Have you worn it as a buttonhole?
No, I haven't actually. I think just a huge, big, ostentatious flower. Maybe I should.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah, get some of those florists to make you up one. Now, what have you got there?
Mary from Whitby.
Yep. And what's she got?
She's got sticky substances on some of her houseplants.
Oh.
Well, I know what that is.
What is it?
That's
come
a sap-sucking insect. It's probably scale. It could be woolly aphid. Could be red spider mite.
That's interesting because you said, I know what that is. And then, in fact, we've named three things that it could be. But
it could be any one of those.
Any one of those.
And it'll create this sort of, it's like a honeydew type substance. It's basically the insect excretes everywhere. And you get this stickiness on the leaf. And that's the first